Chapter 76. Oh no, not at all. Apostrophe, ah. You are like your cousin Phoenix, my dearest Edith, apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton. He has been to Warwick Castle 50 times, if he has been there once, yet if he came to Leamington, tomorrow I wish he would, dear angel, he would make his 52nd visit next day. Apostrophe, we are all enthusiastic, are we not, Mama? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Edith, with a cold smile. Too much so, for our peace, perhaps, my dear, apostrophe returned her mother, but we won't complain. Our own emotions are our recompense. If, as your cousin Phoenix says, the sword wears out the, what's its name, the scabbard, perhaps, apostrophe said Edith. Exactly, a little too fast, it is because it is bright and glowing, you know, my dearest love. Apostrophe, Mrs. Skewton heaved a gentle sigh, supposed to cast a shadow on the surface of that dagger of lath, whereof her susceptible bosom was the sheath. And leaning her head on one side, in the Cleopatra manner, looked with pensive affection on her darling child. Edith had turned her face towards Mr. Dombey, when he first addressed her, and had remained in that attitude, while speaking to her mother, and while her mother spoke to her, as though offering him her attention, if he had anything more to say. There was something in the manner of this simple courtesy, almost defiant, and giving it the character of being rendered on compulsion, or as a matter of traffic to which she was a reluctant party, again not lost upon that same observer who was smiling round the board. It set him thinking of her as he had first seen her, when she had believed herself to be alone among the trees. Mr. Dombey, having nothing else to say, proposed the breakfast being now finished, and the major gorged, like any boa constrictor, that they should start. A barouche being in waiting, according to the orders of that gentleman, the two ladies, the major and himself, took their seats in it. The native and the one page mounted the box, Mr. Towlinson being left behind, and Mr. Carker, on horseback, brought up the rear. Mr. Carker cantered behind the carriage, at the distance of 100 yards or so, and watched it, during all the ride, as if he were a cat, indeed, and its four occupants, mice. Whether he looked to one side of the road, or to the other over distant landscape, with its smooth undulations, windmills, corn, grass, beanfields, wild flowers, farmyards, hayricks, and the spire among the wood, or upwards in the sunny air, where butterflies were sporting round his head, and birds were pouring out their songs, or downward, where the shadows of the branches interlaced, and made a trembling carpet on the road, or onward, where the overhanging trees formed aisles and arches, dim with the softened light that steeped through leaves. One corner of his eye was ever on the formal head of Mr. Dombey, addressed towards him, and the feather in the bonnet, drooping so neglectfully and scornfully between them, much as he had seen the haughty eyelids droop, not least so, when the face met that now fronting it. Once, and once only, did his wary glance release these objects, and that was, when a leap over a low hedge, and a gallop across a field, enabled him to anticipate the carriage coming by the road, and to be standing ready, at the journey's end, to hand the ladies out. Then, and but then, he met her glance for an instant in her first surprise, but when he touched her, in alighting, with his soft white hand, it overlooked him altogether as before. Mrs. Skewton was bent on taking charge of Mr. Carker herself, and showing him the beauties of the castle. She was determined to have his arm, and the major's too. It would do that incorrigible creature, who was the most barbarous infidel in point of poetry, good to be in such company. This chance arrangement left Mr. Dombey at liberty to escort Edith, which he did, stalking before them through the apartments with a gentlemanly solemnity. Those darling bygone times, Mr. Carker, apostrophe said Cleopatra, with their delicious fortresses, and their dear old dungeons, and their delightful places of torture, and their romantic vengeances, and their picturesque assaults and sieges, and everything that makes life truly charming. How dreadfully we have degenerated. Apostrophe, yes, we have fallen off deplorably, apostrophe said Mr. Carker. The peculiarity of their conversation was that Mrs. Skewton, in spite of her ecstasies, and Mr. Carker, in spite of his urbanity, were both intent on watching Mr. Dombey and Edith. With all their conversational endowments, they spoke somewhat distractedly, and at random, in consequence. We have no faith left, positively, apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton, advancing her shriveled ear. For Mr. Dombey was saying something to Edith. We have no faith in the dear old barons, who were the most delightful creatures, or in the dear old priests, who were the most warlike of men, or even in the days of that inestimable Queen Bess, upon the wall there, which were so extremely golden. Dear creature! She was all heart and that charming father of hers. I hope you dote on Harry VIII. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I admire him very much, apostrophe said Carker. So bluff. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Skewton, wasn't he? So burly. So truly English. Such a picture too, he makes, with his dear little peepy eyes, and his benevolent chin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Carker, stopping short. But if you speak of pictures, there's a composition. What gallery in the world can produce the counterpart of that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as the smiling gentleman thus spake, he pointed through a doorway to where Mr. Dombey and Edith were standing alone in the center of another room. They were not interchanging a word or a look. Standing together, arm in arm, they had the appearance of being more divided than if seas had rolled between them. There was a difference even in the pride of the two, that removed them farther from each other, than if one had been the proudest, and the other the humblest specimen of humanity in all creation. He, self-important, unbending, formal, austere. She, lovely and graceful, in an uncommon degree, but totally regardless of herself and him and everything around, and spurning her own attractions with her haughty brow and lip, as if they were a badger livery she hated. So unmatched were they, and opposed, so forced and linked together by a chain which adverse hazard and mischance had forged. That fancy might have imagined the pictures on the walls around them, startled by the unnatural conjunction, and observant of it in their several expressions. Grim knights and warriors looked scowling on them. A churchman, with his hand upraised, denounced the mockery of such a couple coming to God's altar. Quiet waters in landscapes, with the sun reflected in their depths, asked if better means of escape were not at hand. Was there no drowning left? Ruins cried, look here, and see what we are, wedded to uncongenial time. Apostrophe, apostrophe, animals, opposed by nature, worried one another, as a moral to them. Loves and cupids took to flight afraid, and martyrdom had no such torment in its painted history of suffering. Nevertheless, Mrs. Skewton was so charmed by the sight to which Mr. Carker invoked her attention, that she could not refrain from saying, half aloud, how sweet, how very full of soul it was. Edith, overhearing, looked round, and flushed indignant scarlet to her hair. My dearest Edith knows I was admiring her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Cleopatra, tapping her, almost timidly, on the back with her parasol. Sweet pet. Apostrophe, apostrophe, again Mr. Carker saw the strife he had witnessed so unexpectedly among the trees. Again he saw the haughty languor and indifference come over it, and hide it like a cloud. She did not raise her eyes to him, but with a slight peremptory motion of them, seemed to bid her mother come near. Mrs. Skewton thought it expedient to understand the hint, and advancing quickly, with her two cavaliers, kept near her daughter from that time. Mr. Carker now, having nothing to distract his attention, began to discourse upon the pictures, and to select the best, and point them out to Mr. Dombey. Speaking with his usual familiar recognition of Mr. Dombey's greatness, and rendering homage by adjusting his eyeglass for him, or finding out the right place in his catalogue, or holding his stick, or the like. These services did not so much originate with Mr. Carker, in truth, as with Mr. Dombey himself, who was apt to assert his chieftainship by saying, with subdued authority, and in an easy way for him here, Carker, have the goodness to assist me, will you? ... which the smiling gentleman always did with pleasure. They made the tour of the pictures, the walls, crow's nest, and so forth, and as they were still one little party, and the major was rather in the shade, being sleepy during the process of digestion, Mr. Carker became communicative and agreeable. At first, he addressed himself for the most part to Mrs. Skewton, but as that sensitive lady was in such ecstasies with the works of art, after the first quarter of an hour, that she could do nothing but yawn, they were such perfect inspirations, she observed as a reason for that mark of rapture, he transferred his attentions to Mr. Dombey. Mr. Dombey said little beyond an occasional very true, Carker, apostrophe or indeed, Carker, but he tacitly encouraged Carker to proceed, and inwardly approved of his behavior very much, deeming it as well that somebody should talk, and thinking that his remarks, which were, as one might say, a branch of the parent establishment, might amuse Mrs. Granger. Mr. Carker, who possessed an excellent discretion, never took the liberty of addressing that lady direct, but she seemed to listen, though she never looked at him. And once or twice, when he was emphatic in his peculiar humility, the twilight smile stole over her face, not as a light, but as a deep black shadow. Warwick Castle being at length pretty well exhausted, and the major very much so. To say nothing of Mrs. Skewton, whose peculiar demonstrations of delight had become very frequent indeed. The carriage was again put in requisition, and they rode to several admired points of view in the neighborhood. Mr. Dombey ceremoniously observed of one of these, that a sketch, however slight, from the fair hand of Mrs. Granger, would be a remembrance to him of that agreeable day. Though he wanted no artificial remembrance, he was sure, here Mr. Dombey made another of his bows, which he must always highly value. Withers the lean, having Edith's sketchbook under his arm, was immediately called upon by Mrs. Skewton to produce the same, and the carriage stopped, that Edith might make the drawing, which Mr. Dombey was to put away among his treasures. But I am afraid I trouble you too much, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey. By no means. Where would you wish it taken from? Apostrophe she answered, turning to him with the same enforced attention as before. Mr. Dombey, with another bow, which cracked the starch in his cravat, would beg to leave that to the artist. I would rather you chose for yourself, apostrophe said Edith. Suppose then, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, we say from here. It appears a good spot for the purpose, Carker, what do you think? ... There happened to be in the foreground, at some little distance, a grove of trees, not unlike that in which Mr. Carker had made his chain of footsteps in the morning, and with a seat under one tree, greatly resembling, in the general character of its situation, the point where his chain had broken. Might I venture to suggest to Mrs. Granger, apostrophe said Carker, that is an interesting, almost a curious point of view? ... She followed the direction of his riding whip with her eyes, and raised them quickly to his face. It was the second glance they had exchanged since their introduction, and would have been exactly like the first, but that its expression was plainer. Will you like that? ... said Edith to Mr. Dombey. I shall be charmed, ... said Mr. Dombey to Edith. Therefore the carriage was driven to the spot where Mr. Dombey was to be charmed, and Edith, without moving from her seat, and opening her sketchbook with her usual proud indifference, began to sketch. My pencils are all pointless, ... she said, stopping and turning them over. Pray allow me, ... said Mr. Dombey. Or Carker will do it better, as he understands these things. Carker, have the goodness to see to these pencils for Mrs. Granger. Mr. Carter rode up close to the carriage door on Mrs. Granger's side, and letting the rein fall on his horse's neck, took the pencils from her hand with a smile and a bow, and sat in the saddle leisurely mending them. Having done so, he begged to be allowed to hold them, and to hand them to her as they were required. And thus Mr. Carker, with many commendations of Mrs. Granger's extraordinary skill especially in trees, remained close at her side, looking over the drawing as she made it. Mr. Dombey in the meantime stood bolt upright in the carriage like a highly respectable ghost, looking on too, while Cleopatra and the Major dallied as two ancient doves might do. Are you satisfied with that, or shall I finish it a little more? ... said Edith, showing the sketch to Mr. Dombey. Mr. Dombey begged that it might not be touched. It was perfection. It is most extraordinary, ... said Carker, bringing every one of his red gums to bear upon his praise. I was not prepared for anything so beautiful, and so unusual altogether. ... This might have applied to the sketcher, no less than to the sketch. But Mr. Carker's manner was openness itself, not as to his mouth alone, but as to his whole spirit. So it continued to be while the drawing was laid aside for Mr. Dombey, and while the sketching materials were put up. Then he handed in the pencils, which were received with a distant acknowledgement of his help, but without a look, and tightening his rein, fell back, and followed the carriage again. Thinking, perhaps, as he rode, that even this trivial sketch had been made and delivered to its owner, as if it had been bargained for and bought. Thinking, perhaps, that although she had assented with such perfect readiness to his request, her haughty face, bent over the drawing, or glancing at the distant objects represented in it, had been the face of a proud woman, engaged in a sordid and miserable transaction. Thinking, perhaps, of such things. But smiling certainly, and while he seemed to look about him freely, in enjoyment of the air and exercise, keeping always that sharp corner of his eye upon the carriage. A stroll among the haunted ruins of Kenilworth, and more rides to more points of view. Most of which, Mrs. Skewton reminded Mr. Dombey, Edith had already sketched, as he had seen in looking over her drawings. Brought the day's expedition to a close. Mrs. Skewton and Edith were driven to their own lodgings. Mr. Carker was graciously invited by Cleopatra to return thither with Mr. Dombey and the Major, in the evening, to hear some of Edith's music, and the three gentlemen repaired to their hotel to dinner. The dinner was the counterpart of yesterday's, except that the Major was 24 hours more triumphant and less mysterious. Edith was toasted again. Mr. Dombey was again agreeably embarrassed. And Mr. Carker was full of interest and praise. There were no other visitors at Mrs. Skewton's. Edith's drawings were strewn about the room, a little more abundantly than usual perhaps, and Withers, the wan page, handed round a little stronger tea. The harp was there, the piano was there, and Edith sang and played. But even the music was played by Edith to Mr. Dombey's order, as it were, in the same uncompromising way. As thus. Edith, my dearest love, ... said Mrs. Skewton, half an hour after tea. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.